Hello. In this audio snippet, we would like to continue talking about betrayal. And we wish we could move to another topic. There's so many things to talk about, but it seems as if that continues to be what is lingering in the air. It just stays there and it continues to manifest itself or show its presence. And it goes, I believe, to the fact that we are in a period of an exposing of a very deep betrayal, especially because of what America has done to the truth as it turned its back on the truth. So we'll try to share some links or some news stories that we were not able to get to either last week or the week before, but we'll try to share them and more or less continue talking about this theme of betrayal that seems to be in the news, in the air, constantly. So the first thing I would like to do is to share some peculiar news stories that have been coming out related to Ohio. For some reason, Ohio and Tennessee, but in particular Ohio, has been coming up in the news over and over again in a whole bunch of peculiar stories. And I know it's not a coincidence, because it's that confirmation of betrayal being in the air, and the fact that Ohio and Tennessee are, for some reason, are the two epicenters of that betrayal spirit or mindset that took over America and led to and contributed to its death. So let's share this story first. Let me go here to that story. To be frank, I don't quite recall if we had already talked about this before, and if we did, maybe it wasn't in much detail. But the headline is from a story on December 31st of 2023, and it reads, Trump slams Ohio's Republican Governor Mike DeWine for vetoing ban on sex change for minors. It says here, the legislation, House Bill 68, would have also banned biological male students from playing on sports teams meant for girls. DeWine told reporters on Friday that the ban would do more harm than good. Those are his words, literally. Then he said, these are truly complex issues and reasonable people draw vastly different conclusions, DeWine said during a press conference on Friday. This bill would impact a very small number of Ohio's children, but for those children who face gender dysphoria and for their families, the consequences of this could not be more profound. DeWine claimed that parents of transgender children told him that their kids would have committed suicide without sex change procedures. And then he said, ultimately, I believe this is about protecting human life. Many parents have told me that their child would not have survived, would be dead today, if they had not received the treatment they received from one of Ohio's children's hospitals. I've also been told by those who are now grown adults that but for this care, they would have taken their lives while they were teenagers, unquote. In a post to Truth Social, Trump blasted the decision and said that DeWine had, quote, fallen to the radical left, unquote. And then he said, so the quote that Trump posted on Truth Social says, DeWine has fallen to the radical left. No wonder he gets loudly booed in Ohio every time I introduce him at rallies, but I won't be introducing him anymore. Trump had previously endorsed DeWine during his 2022 reelection bid. So, and then Trump also said in the, on True Social, "I'm finished with this stiff." What was he thinking? The bill would have stopped child mutilation and prevented men from playing in women's sports. Legislature will hopefully overturn. Do it fast. And then it says here, Republican lawmakers had passed the bill with overwhelming support. The Ohio GOP also holds supermajorities in both chambers and will have the opportunity to override the governor's veto. And by the way, this was posted on thegatewaypundit.com, as we said, on December 31st of 2023. So there are several things here. Again, this exposes the betrayal of this quote Republican governor who now is mentioning these, I don't know how real it is, because, you know, when you're dealing with a traitor, you never know if he's just making stuff up or he, if he's saying, telling the truth, that he supposedly talked to some parents who said, oh, my child would be dead. And that obviously highlights several things. First of all, if this were true, that these kids would have killed themselves if they hadn't had the operation, that tells you their state of mind, that that these kids are not mentally stable. And it's not that they were, how can we say this? They were not like born with six arms and four legs, and that's why they wanted to kill themselves, because they had these horribly mutilated bodies or something to that effect. They were normal kids with normal bodies, but something in their mind went awry, and if they're at that point of wanting to kill themselves, then the problem is mental. It just goes to a mental problem. And he points out just one or two, or just who knows how many kids, if they really exist, who would have killed themselves. But what about all those kids who go ahead, have the operation, and then have the regret and can't change back? So now... And what will be of those kids? Would this son of a bitch, bastard, cursed as he, worry about the lives of those who would want to kill themselves because now they can't, they had an operation that they cannot reverse? I don't know. But the thing is that clearly that this shows the treachery of this guy who claims to be a Republican, but he really isn't. And he's been like that. This is just it's not like I had to wait for this moment to realize, oh, he's a traitor. I've known this, and a lot of people, even in Ohio, have known this for a long time. He is a traitor. That's why we would talk about how ridiculous it was, and we've said this in previous audio snippets from a while back, where Trump would get angry at the crowd for booing him. He would be in Ohio, and he... DeWine would be on stage, and maybe DeWine was the one introducing him or whatever, supposedly supporting Trump, and then the crowd would boo DeWine, and Trump would say, "Hey, don't do that," and we had talked about that, and he mentions this in his Truth Social, stupid name by the way, Truth Social post, when he says, no wonder he gets loudly booed in Ohio every time I introduce him at rallies. So when I read that, you'd go, Trump is standing up to this guy, because we had said in a previous audio snippet that there's a good chance Trump would not say anything against DeWine. But he did. So it would look like he proved his critics wrong. Such as yours truly wrong, but if you read the post carefully, you will see that instead of confirming that Trump is standing up to the traitor, it's even making his betrayal of the American people even deeper. It just exposes it. And why? Because first of all, DeWine has fallen to the radical left, as if it happened yesterday. And then he says, no wonder he gets loudly booed in Ohio. So every time I introduce him at rallies, but I won't be introducing him anymore. So he was getting booed. The people were telling him there's something wrong with this guy that you're supporting. And he kept saying, oh, whatever, whatever, whatever. And then it took this extreme manifestation of betrayal for him to finally say, oh, yeah, yeah, no wonder. No wonder he gets booed. But there, if you read the words, there's no regret. There's no sense of shame in him having supported this traitor, Ohio traitor, over and over again. When everybody else knew he was a traitor and he wasn't willing to recognize it. And so he now goes, oh, no wonder he gets loudly booed. Instead of saying, I am ashamed of having supported him. Now I understand and I apologize to the people of Ohio that I kept shushing and saying, hey, don't do that. That is inappropriate or incorrect or you're wrong about him. Instead of apologizing to these to the people who were trying to tell him and warn him, he now suddenly joins them in indignation. So there's no sense of apology, no sense of sorrow. It's like no willingness to recognize that he did something wrong. It says here, when he says, "I'm finished with this stiff," what was he thinking? And the more important question should be to him, to himself, what was I thinking? Trump should be saying, what was I thinking when I kept promoting this guy and supporting him? The Truth Social post that Trump made about him, instead of showing that he stands up against traitors, it just shows that he has no awareness. There is no backtracking and analyzing and looking and seeing, okay, did I do something wrong here? And he does that constantly. So when people stab him in the back, then when he sees the knife, and it's a huge knife, because they keep stabbing him in ways that he doesn't notice or realize. But when it's like a blatant kind of samurai sword just going all the way through his torso, and he looks down and sees the big samurai sword sticking out of his torso, that's when he goes, oh, you are a traitor. When all the warning signs and all the people warning him were there for a long, long time, and he still is not capable of looking back, processing the information and saying, hey, I think I have to learn to judge people a little better now. So this story shows the betrayal spirit of Ohio. It shows Trump's inability to recognize that betrayal. And instead of saying, hey, I was actually betraying the people of Ohio by supporting this guy. Instead of saying that, now he acts all indignant, as if DeWine betrayed the people of Ohio for the first time ever. And now this DeWine claiming to protect human life, and that's a whole bunch of rubbish. He's doing it because he is a traitor. But he has now betrayed all the little kids that we should be protecting at this point, because they are being attacked with all this gender confusion, and they're being psychologically made into being convinced into doing damage, permanent physical damage to themselves. So it's ironic that he's concerned about one or two that would have killed themselves. And this is all hypothetical. We don't know if they would have killed themselves. So he's okay with protecting those two who would have harmed themselves in the form of suicide, protecting those supposedly in his twisted way, but he's not willing to protect all the others who are going to harm themselves because they're young kids, they are susceptible, and they are going to be harming themselves, and there's not going to be anyone to help protect them. So this is just an example of the betrayal mindset that's just permeating in America now, and how it's somehow connected to Ohio and Tennessee in a very profound way. So that's one thing we wanted to mention. This is a peculiar story, and I think it doesn't technically or directly speak of betrayal explicitly, but I believe that the fact that the story came out around these days and that it's related to Ohio, a peculiar story about Ohio, I think it reflects something about the nature of betrayal. And I think these stories are not only exposing that there is betrayal, but they are exposing the anatomy of betrayal. And we've tried to kind of mention a couple of things that have stood out, but I believe that it is going over my head to be frank, but it is there, and it's worth sharing, even if at least yours truly doesn't get the full details of it, but I believe they have to be said anyway. And the story that we want to mention here is from December 31st, 2023, posted on thegatewaypundit.com. And the headline says, Frontier Airlines sends an unaccompanied minor on flight to Puerto Rico instead of Ohio. So it says a 16-year-old unaccompanied minor was supposed to travel from Florida to his mother in Ohio on a Frontier Airlines flight, but he ended up in Puerto Rico instead. He was supposed to fly from Tampa to Cleveland, it says here, on December 22nd, and he ended up in San Juan, Puerto Rico. And it says here, Frontier Director of Corporate Communications Jennifer De La Cruz said in a statement to CNN that the Ohio and Puerto Rico flights departed from the same gate, with the flight to Puerto Rico taking off first. Frontier has extended sincere apologies to the family for the error. The teen's father, Ryan Lewis, I don't know if that's how he pronounces it, L-O-S-E, so it could be Lowe's. It looks like the verb to lose, Ryan Lowe's, but I'll say Ryan Lowe's because Ryan Lewis sounds weird. So Ryan Lowe's told CNN that it was his son's first time flying alone and that he suffers from anxiety. It says when he arrived at the gate, the flight to Puerto Rico was boarding. He went up there and asked the lady if the flight was boarding, and they said yes. And they also checked his bag to make sure it fit. And then the father said, but Logan said they never scanned his ticket. Logan said they just glanced at it and said, yes, you're on the right flight. And then he boarded. If they had scanned his boarding pass, they would have known my son was on the wrong plane, unquote, Lowe's said. The parents realized something was wrong when he boarded too early for his flight. That's when my 9-year-old son looked up the flight status and realized that a flight to Puerto Rico had just taken off from the same gate Logan's Ohio flight was taking off from. The family tried to call and warn him that he was on the wrong flight before it departed, but his phone went straight to voicemail. When they contacted Frontier, they confirmed that he was, in fact, on the wrong flight. And then they talk about another incident of another kid who was put on the wrong flight, a 6-year-old. Now, this young man is 16 years old. So he's not a 6-year-old kid like the person described in the next segment of the story. But yeah, you can understand in the confusion, the kid was nervous and he was asking, is this the plane that I have to take? But everybody kept telling him yes, to the point that they checked in his bags and put him on the plane. And that on the one hand, talks a lot about security, because they just looked at the, at his, ticket or whatever, And they just, oh yeah, you're on the right flight and let him in. So he could have been a terrorist for all we know. And no one would have been the wiser. So that's a little bit worrisome on the one hand, but it just illustrates the principle of betrayal, because this kid was betrayed by all the people who were there to help him be on the right flight. And it shows this thing. So there's this gate that that apparently or gave the impression that it was headed for one place when it was really headed for another. And that's what betrayal does. It's this shifting of things. It has a label of one thing when deep inside it's another. And all the people who participated in this, kept saying, hey, yeah, this is the flight to Ohio. That's how they portrayed it to the kid, even though they never said it explicitly. And he ended up being in Puerto Rico, and I think Puerto Rico reflects the Hispanic spirit, which is a very treacherous and conniving spirit that is moving in this country right now. And the fact that Ohio, Cleveland, Ohio, and San Juan, Puerto Rico were like the same place, it's like it just shows how Ohio has degraded into the betrayal of the Hispanic wave, if it makes any sense. It's so this story talks about how betrayal is manifested in someone pretending to be something, having a title of something, but really being another thing in the background. And because no one is looking into the details, no one is digging in to see and to confirm, then they let the superficial trick them. Just like this lady or the person who checked the ticket and said, oh yeah, you're on the right flight, and let the kid through without scanning the ticket. No one is digging into the information, and they are all just letting a superficial label or superficial appearance lead them on. It's just like Trump, for example. He says, oh, Mike DeWine is a Republican, hence I will support him. And that's all he sees. He sees Mike DeWine at the gate, and supposedly he's going to Ohio, but he's really going to Puerto Rico. So he's acting like a third world traitor, but he pretends to be a first world Republican. But Trump doesn't dig into details. He doesn't look at the ticket. He doesn't look at the clear signs. If he did a little bit of homework to realize this man is not what he says he is. He is a flight to Puerto Rico, not a flight to Cleveland. So interestingly, the son or the person here, the father was named Ryan, and that sounds very very Irish to me. And the kid's name is Logan, and I could be wrong, but I think Logan is an Irish surname. I believe it's I just looked it up. Logan is a surname that originated from both Ireland and Scotland, so it's a very Celtic name. So it kind of reinforces the betrayal thing, because we've been talking about Ireland in the context of betrayal. So Logan is the kid's name, Logan Luz. So it's not his surname, but Logan as a name is Irish. And the father's name, Ryan, is also an Irish surname. So the father and the son both have Irish surnames as their first names, which is very peculiar. And I don't know if this Lowe's name might end up being a Celtic surname. Who knows? I have no idea. And this shows in a certain way how traitors, and I think that's a theme that I began to see in many of these stories, how traitors are also bitten by betrayal. It's as if when you enter into the world of betraying, you also get exposed to being betrayed yourself. And these two Irish named persons were betrayed by other people. So they were the victims of betrayal. Instead of being the perpetrators of betrayal, they were the victims of betrayal. And I think that's what we get into when we are in an atmosphere of betrayal, when people engage in betrayal, we get into this atmosphere of betraying and being betrayed, betraying and being betrayed. And it's this horrible cycle of self-destruction that we get into. I believe that's what's going on. And again, how could this have happened? This 16-year-old being told by everyone and being seated and going to the wrong place. But I think it's just a confirmation of that, of all these things we've been saying. And another story, from related to Ohio, posted on thegatewaypundit.com, once again, from January 2nd, 2024. The headline reads, breaking, GOP Representative Bill Johnson resigns from Congress, leaving Republicans with razor-thin majority. And when I read that headline, I don't know Bill Johnson. I have no idea who he is. I could not care less. But when I read the headline, the immediate thought that came to me is, I wonder if he is a representative from Ohio. So I started reading the story, and then first line of the story, GOP Representative Bill Johnson, in parentheses, Ohio, on Tuesday announced he will be resigning from Congress. As the Gateway Pundit's Kristen Taylor reported, the resignation from the House by former Speaker Kevin McCarthy took effect Sunday. Following the resignation of McCarthy, an Irish traitor, and Bill Johnson, and the ousting of George Santos, the Republicans will be left with a razor-thin majority of 219 to 213 by January 21st. Assuming full attendance, the Republicans can only afford to lose two more votes on any measure. This is a clear example of betrayal. I know that the whole system is broken, and it doesn't really matter who is there, who's not there. It's all over. The country's gone. It's over. But what I'm trying to say is, from his perspective, you know, he's there. So if he's a representative, at least he either believes there's a chance to right the ship, or at least he could, out of principle, just try to do the right thing whilst he's there. He knows his party is on this razor-thin situation. And instead of saying, okay, I'm going to stick it out, I'm going to stay here to support the American people to do my job, he bailed and said no. So he betrayed his own party, and he betrayed the American people. He betrayed the people who voted for him, because he just is not interested. And I think in part it's because, just like Kevin McCarthy, the former speaker, got booted, and as we've said a million times before, he was a worthless Irish traitor. When he left, it's as if it was clear to traitors like Bill Johnson that they were not going to be able to do their normal betrayals, that there's no one in charge right now who is going to lead the betrayal in the traditional betrayal way that they're accustomed to. So it's like, oh, if they're not going to let me be a rhino the way I want to be, out of conviction, I would rather resign and do something else than be here. So he's willing to betray the American people just because he's now in a situation where he can't be a rhino in a natural, relaxed way. And he took a job apparently as president of Youngstown University or some university, Youngstown State University, he will become the head, he says here, of Youngstown State University on the day his resignation goes into effect. So he's now going to have a cushy, worthless job in some university, and so he's looking out for number one, and he could not care less about the state of the country, the state of disaster that we're in. And yeah, like whatever, I'm going to go live my life and do my thing. So clearly a traitor, and cursed is he, worthless son of a bitch who will more than likely burn in hell the day he dies. Cursed is he. So now another interesting story related to Ohio. And by the way, it seems like the heart of the betrayal seems to come from Cleveland. I think in Ohio, Cleveland is the place that has the most Democrats in the whole state. That's where they kind of bunch up together, and they have this influence on the entire state. So the headline here says, from the Daily Mail, dailymail.co.uk, it was posted on the 2nd of January, 2024, and it reads, Frank Ryan, the last quarterback to lead the Cleveland Browns to an NFL title in 1964, dies from Alzheimer's disease, aged 87 on New Year's Day. It says here, Frank Ryan led the Cleveland Browns to their last title in 1964 with a 27-0 victory. Away from the football ball field, he taught math at Rice, Yale, and Case Western. I don't know, it seems related. First of all, again, the name Ryan and the surname, you know, clearly an Irish fellow, Frank Ryan. And it's interesting that an Irish fellow was the last quarterback to lead the Cleveland Browns to an NFL title back in 1964. That's how long ago it was. And sadly, they beat my beloved Baltimore Colts in that championship game. And apparently, from what I read in the story, it was an unexpected victory. The Colts were expected to win, but somehow the Browns stunned the Colts and won that championship game 27-0. But it's interesting that I know it's not a coincidence that this man ends up dying around these days that we're talking about Ohio and betrayal. And he was an Irishman who led Cleveland to a title in the last title, and they haven't won anything since then. And the connection is because of the fact that he's Irish. It's as if the truth were saying, hey, I want to highlight that the last time an Ohio football team won an NFL title here in America, it was being led by a man of Celtic descent. And that just points to the connection of the Celtic betrayal and Ohio. I know it's not a coincidence. Another story that we wanted to share about the Cleveland Browns as well, and it's kind of peculiar, and I know it's not a coincidence, it's all related. This was posted on the 28th of December, 2023. It's one of the stories we were not able to get to in the previous recording. Posted again on the Daily Mail, .co.uk, and it reads, the headline, Elijah Moore appears to horrifyingly jolt involuntarily after being tackled face down to the ground in Browns versus Jets in NFL before being ruled out with a concussion for Cleveland. Elijah Moore was tackled to the ground by C.J. Mosley of the New York Jets. The Browns wide receiver appeared to twitch involuntarily on the ground. And I saw the video of the hit, and to be frank, the hit doesn't look that bad. The guy tackles him and drives him to the ground, and he goes like face first onto the grass, but it doesn't look that bad. I've seen worse hits, he lies on the ground. He turns around, looking face up, and he starts to twitch, and he has grass on his helmet, If this had been a game on artificial turf, like back in the 1980s, 1990s, I would have understood him really being seriously hurt. Even though the hit was not really that bad, it really wasn't that bad. But back in the day when they had artificial turf in many football, American football stadiums, it would have been pretty bad because usually those artificial turf stadiums had just this like thin layer of like a carpet, you could say, and they had cement underneath. So a lot of players always complained about it being, it was a very good surface to run, because, you know, it was a very hard surface that gave you a lots of traction, shall we say. It was not like grass that is softer and kind of yields a little more and your cleats dig in a little more. So you kind of slow down a bit. But aside from that, it did horrible damage to many players' knees because it was so hard. There was no cushioning. And also when you hit the ground on that thing, it was painful because it wouldn't yield. There wasn't enough cushioning. But that has changed. The stadiums are not like that anymore. And this game was played on a grass field. There was no reason for it really to be that bad. And I know in my being that the reason why this happened was that I don't have like the x-rays to prove this, but I believe and I'm convinced in my heart that this is what happened. This guy must have taken the clot shot, the mod RNA gene therapy injection, and that has been doing its wonderful work of creating all these tiny blood clots along his system. And I'm pretty certain that one of those got lodged in his brain somewhere. It was tiny. It was there. And then when the hit happened, the hit was strong enough to jolt that that clot, and then cause it to move in his brain and do some sort of damage. And that's why it's like a brain aneurysm. He had like a minor brain aneurysm the moment that blood clot got jolted and it broke something. And that's why he ended up twitching, because I have seen that twitching before, and I've seen it in videos of people suddenly dying and people who start doing this convulsion kind of thing and then dying and that sort of death, that type of death started happening a lot and was documented in some videos and it started happening when the injection was rolled out. So this is an effect of you know, the injection is it's an evil act of betrayal that the pharmaceutical companies did on the American population, and the American population got duped into it because they were not listening to the truth. And that's what I see in this story. The traitors being bitten and being betrayed. Right back. So Elijah Moore here, unfortunately for him, suffering the consequences of this of the injection. And no one will ever say it was the injection. They will attribute it to a million things except the possibility, because they are not looking for it. You know, it's as if some, you know, people are dying from arsenic poisoning, but no one is looking for arsenic in the tox screens or in the autopsies, because they are saying, oh, it's all a conspiracy or whatever they want to say. So no one wants to look for it, even if it's obviously there, because as we all know, the hospitals and everybody, they all were financially benefiting from promoting the injection. And now no one wants to point it out. Everyone is willing to look the other way, because the whole industry is now, shall we say, in jeopardy no one can really point it out or start asking questions, scientific questions or anything. So we will never know. And by the way, the people who start asking questions or pointing out the scientific aspects and saying, hey, look at this, they are immediately ostracized and so forth. But And the interesting thing also, as I'm watching these photos of this story, is that the Browns were not wearing their normal uniform. They were wearing like a white uniform with a white helmet, when they usually have this brown helmet, this orange helmet with a brown uniform. And I know it's not, I think it's like them pretending to be something they're not. It looks like that they're not wearing their normal uniform. And this happened to them. So I don't know. It seems interesting, peculiar that this happened to a player who plays for a Cleveland, Ohio football team. And it's almost as a reflection of him being betrayed, or him being bitten by a snake that betrayed him, a snake that he trusted. Again, it's that theme of the traitors being betrayed. You get into this cycle of just constant betrayal. Another story from the Daily Mail, again, related to Ohio. All these strange stories coming out related to Ohio. This one was posted on the 31st of December, 2023, on the dailymail.co.uk. And the headline says, Ohio man nearly dies after eating 4 poisonous mushrooms he foraged from his backyard with his Italian pasta, and claims smartphone app plant identifier told him of the fungi was edible. So again, this is a person being betrayed, being given false information and acting on that false information and being betrayed by it. Just like Elijah Moore, I'm convinced Elijah Moore had this incident, that football player, because he got injected and it triggered something. This blood clot was just an aneurysm waiting to happen. And then when he got hit, it was not a hard hit. I mean, I've seen boxers get hit harder during a boxing match with a regular punch. It was not that extraordinary. And the twitching, there's something going on. They attributed it to a concussion, but it's more than a concussion. I know a brain aneurysm, something happened in his brain. And that created this, this strange reaction. And now this Ohio man, also being poisoned a different way from Elijah Moore, but in this case, eating 4 poisonous mushrooms that his plant identifier app. So he had an app telling him, hey, this is safe. The traitors being betrayed. I don't know what else to say about this, but yes, I'm trying to see here. He was transferred to University Hospital in Cleveland. So a lot of things centered around Cleveland for some reason, Cleveland, Ohio. Okay. So that's that. And it says here, this year alone, at the end of the story, Ohio's poison centers have had more than 260 mushroom-related calls as of October, with 45% of them going to the ER and 33 people hospitalized. So I don't know if this happens all over the place, and this is just a stat that is normal across the country, but it's interesting that in Ohio, more than 260 mushroom-related calls as of October, and 45% going to the ER, and 33 of them being hospitalized. So I don't know. That theme of Ohio betrayal and being betrayed. And speaking of being betrayed, another story from Ohio, related to Ohio. It's not like I have someone on the Daily Mail I'm saying to him, could you help me out here? I want to convince people of this, and can you start posting stories about Ohio? It's not like I have someone there doing it. This is just happening. It's the truth, just exposing things. And that's why all these weird stories about Ohio coming out. So this one was posted on the 29th of December, 2023, and we wanted to get to it, I think, last week, but we were not able to get to it. It was posted on the dailymail.co.uk, and it says, the headline, couple who sold their apartment and most of their belongings to embark on 3-year cruise forced to live in a hotel room after a voyage gets canceled. So it says here, Kara and Joe Youssef from Ohio put down $80,000 for a cruise deposit. The couple sold their apartment and most of their belongings. The cruise was canceled and they still have yet to get their money back. So apparently there was this scam or this poorly organized cruise trip. It could be a combination of both, but clearly they were sold a bill of goods. They paid for the bill of goods and they got betrayed. And it says they are, let me see if I can find it here. They are now, at least at last, last was reported, they were stuck in Turkey. The story just goes into all the details of the thing, but it's not worth going into. It's just that, and by the way, it says here, after getting the stamp of approval from the travel agency, the retired New York-based social worker withdrew $80,000 from her retirement savings and made the payment in two parts. So apparently the couple is from Ohio, but the wife is she's a retired New York-based social worker. So there's a connection here to New York. Let me see if I can find it. It's a very long story about all the ugly details, but... yeah, it says here, now the couple is still waiting on their $80,000 refund and are stuck residing in a hotel in Istanbul, Turkey. And the fact that their surname, at least the husband's surname, is Youssef is interesting to me because I'm trying to remember the name of the posting. There's a posting on the website where these recordings are posted where we talk about the name Youssef in the context of someone doing a sneaky betrayal. And we specifically talk about Youssef. So every time I see Youssef, I see betrayal. I don't know why. It's a thing I've had in my head ever since that posting that was done, I believe, in 2006, 2007. So it was over 15 years ago. And Youssef, as you may know, is the Arab form of Joseph, of Yosef, the Hebrew name Yosef. The Arab version of it is Youssef, and that's what I see. You know, someone doing a sneaky betrayal. And if you read the posting, you'd see that I'm not just making it up. The posting talks about a person doing a very sneaky thing, and his name was Youssef. So the thing is that these are people with the name of Betrayal from the state of Betrayal of Ohio, and they bought a very expensive cruise and they sold everything to be on this cruise and enjoy themselves only to find out that it was all a hoax. And I think that's kind of a reflection, maybe in a sense of what traitors do. They betray people, thinking that they will get this big payout that will satisfy them in some way, only to find out that the payout was false or fake, and that it didn't have the it was not what they thought it would be. Let's put it that way. So these people who turn on other people for a reward only to find out that the reward was not worth it. So they betrayed other people for nothing. That's what basically this story is pointing out, betrayal. People betraying others only to find out it was not worth it because you know, like the story in the Bible about Judas being given the 30 pieces of silver, and the 30 pieces of silver were he thought he was going to solidify himself with the religious people and all that, and he was going to get a little extra money, and he realized the payout was not worth anything, and according to the Bible, he went and threw the 30 pieces of silver at the religious leaders and went on to hang himself. I believe this is what this story is about. And the fact that they were stuck in Istanbul is also very interesting to me, because I've always, I don't know if we said on these recordings, but we say it on the website where these recordings are posted, where we talk about the evil of Turkey. And I think we have talked a little bit every now and then in these recordings about Erdogan, the so-called leader in Turkey, an evil man, evil. And just to highlight that, there's a story that came out recently about that. On thegatewaypundit.com, this was posted on the 29th of December, which was the same day that the story about the couple losing their $80,000 happened. Oh, and by the way, the couple sold everything to be on this cruise, and it's just a figure of how when you're betraying, all these traders usually sell everything out. It's like they put all their eggs in that basket of betrayal, only to find out that they are being betrayed themselves. The thing is, on this same day, the 29th, this story came out. And I know it's not a coincidence. These two stories coming out on the same day. This was posted on the gatewaypundit.com on the 29th of December, 2023. And the headline reads, award-winning Turkish reporter Meltem Gunay fired for displaying, quote, pro-Israel Starbucks cup during broadcast. So she was doing her broadcast, and she apparently had bought a cup of Starbucks coffee. And she had it on the table, while she was doing her reporting, you know, with in the studio. So she's there at the desk with her laptop in front of her and her notes, and she's reading the stories of the day, I guess, with some nice fancy graphical background behind her. And she had her cup of coffee with the Starbucks logo, and she was fired for that because supposedly, and she's apparently an award-winning Turkish reporter. That's what it says here. It says the act was seen as provocative in the Muslim country where Starbucks is viewed to be, quote, pro-Israel. Consumers in Turkey have waged a nationwide boycott of the coffee company in support of Palestine since the Hamas terrorist attacks on Israeli civilians on October 7th. And I'm not sure exactly why Starbucks is seen as a pro-Israeli institution. I personally have been boycotting Starbucks since, I think, 2016 for the last 7-8 years, and it was because the last time it was a series of incidents, but the last one that broke the camel's back, shall we say, was one day I went and sat down and started turned on my computer, and I went to one of these sites that I, you know, the conservative sites that I go to because there's nowhere else to go to get news. And I saw that the website would not go through on their Wi-Fi. And so they had blocked it. And I said, why are they blocking this site and other sites like that? And I realized, oh, my goodness. So it just seemed so blatant that they were censoring websites based on political leanings. And obviously enforcing their own twisted far left, left wing liberal ideology on their customers. And that was the last straw. Every time I go by one of those places, they have one of the homosexual arrogance flags or the trans whatever flags there. And I that's why I don't go there anymore. Personally, I don't go there. So it's ironic that now they are seen as being pro-Israel. So Starbucks, getting bitten by the very people that they claim to, or they think they are supporting, because I'm pretty sure that Starbucks is very pro Muslim and anti-Christian and all that stuff. But now the people that they claim to support are biting them in the backside as well. But Turkey is a very evil place. Where a reporter just gets fired because she had a cup of coffee from a company that's not illegal yet. And I wouldn't be surprised if they make a Starbucks illegal in Turkey. It's a very oppressive regime, very anti-democratic, very evil. The Erdogan guy is a murderer who goes around killing his political enemies. He's evil, evil, total evil. And that's where the couple got stuck in Istanbul, Turkey, in a place of lots of evil. That's where you end up when you betray and sell other people out, thinking that you'll have a very wonderful payout and you'll be able to retire in that payout. Just like this guy who retired to be the president of Youngstown State University. And is leaving his party with a very, very narrow and fragile majority in a very critical time in American history. Well, it's no longer critical because the patient is dead, so there's nothing to rescue. But at least from his perspective, you would think he would say to himself, it's my duty to stay for a while longer because the country needs me or whatever. But because he's clearly not retiring out of a sense of frustration over the country being dead. That's not his reason for retiring. He's retiring because he's looking out for numero uno. And so these are the stories about Ohio's, like this variety of stories that are related to betrayal and being betrayed, the traitors being betrayed. So now another story. We wanted to share two quick stories about Tennessee, the other state of betrayal in America. And this one was posted on the Daily Mail and posted on the 1st of January, 2024. And it says, the headline, Blake Shelton slammed by fans over embarrassing New Year's Eve performance. I didn't even watch any of that. To me, it was like just... It was a very sad transition into this year. You know, 2023 was the death of the year that America died. So there was no looking forward to the next year or anything like that. At least this year is a year where I'm on exit mode. I'm not sure if I'll be able to exit the country this year, but I am more on my way out than in. I have no time to be watching these celebrations. There's nothing to celebrate. So I didn't watch the performance. It says here the 47-year-old country star was seen performing on stage with Trace Adkins, 61, not sure who he is, during CBS's New Year's Eve Live, Nashville's Big Bash. So this, he was doing a performance from Nashville, Tennessee. He's a country singer, so they were doing this Nashville performance because Nashville is the capital of country music, shall we say. So apparently the controversy was over him. It says here, the Icons took a step back in time and sang their 2011 hit Hillbilly Bone. Never heard of it. And while it was initially advertised as a live rendition, people who tuned in were quick to point out that it had been pre-recorded. So this is an example of betrayal, you know, pretending to be something that they're not. They were pretending to be singing live, but they really weren't. And I know it's not a coincidence. This is coming from Tennessee at this, as the New Year's, and I say that in quotes, dawn on the country. And they had no reason to do that. Why would they do that? I mean, are they that bad, a bunch of singers? I don't think so. So it's just an example of that, that betrayal, and sometimes unnecessary betrayal. They don't, when you're in a betraying mode, it's like you start doing it just for the, pardon my French, for the hell of it. You just do it because it just, you get gripped by that betrayal and you start betraying even in things that are not worth the price. So what was the advantage of doing this? What did they gain from this, this meaningless betrayal? Now they get criticized and excoriated and humiliated publicly for having done it because they got caught doing the betrayal. It's not worth it. So I think that's what this highlights, the fact that when you enter into betrayal mode, you just start doing it just for doing it, even when there is little to nothing to gain from it. And always the payout is never worth the benefit, the initial benefit of the betrayal. And then another story related to Tennessee posted on the Daily Mail, .co.uk on the 5th of January. So this was, yesterday, in other words, the day before this recording, and the headline says, Tennessee paramedic faces double heartbreak after new boyfriend died suddenly, then pregnancy she learned of days after his death ended in stillbirth. So it says, an EMT from Tennessee was hit with the death of her new boyfriend and the stillbirth of their child just months apart. Abby Young, 24, and her boyfriend Chad found love on Tinder in March 2023. After losing both her boyfriend and CJ, their baby, in two separate incidents, Abby's opening up about the grief she faces. So, interesting, a story from Tennessee. You know, why? It's as if the truth is just pointing out all these peculiar stories about Ohio and Tennessee over and over again. And this is a very sad story. We're not going to read all the details, but they were pretty young, both of them. The young woman was 24, and the young man was 23, the one who passed away. And I was trying to read through the story, trying to get a sense of, you know, what happened, because they just talk about the grief and so forth. I can't quite grasp the details of what happened to the guy, to the young man who died. All I can read here, for example, is her boyfriend had discussed feeling unwell earlier that day, but assumed it was because of his hard work that day. Apparently she got a call that from the boyfriend's mom that he was having trouble breathing. Here it says, so I thought they were calling me for medical advice, which family members sometimes do since I'm an EMT, emergency medical something. And before I can say anything, he tells me Chad is dead. So it says here, Abby was devastated by the news. She had lost the love of her life, whom she was beginning to plan a life together with. But there was something else. The new couple had been secretly taking pregnancy tests that had so far been inconclusive. After Abby, alongside Chad's family, laid him to rest, on August 2nd, Abby's mom encouraged her to take a pregnancy test. Unlike previous tests, this one was definitely positive. I just fell to the floor crying because that was all he talked about, was how excited he was to be a dad, and all I could think about was how I was about to have this child that he wanted so bad and he wasn't going to be here to see it. I was also happy to have a piece of him to carry with me forever, but devastated he wasn't there to share it with me. And it says here, just as Abby got excited about motherhood by buying baby supplies and preparing for a pregnancy announcement, another tragedy struck. Abby's boss noticed she looked unwell at work and sent the 24-year-old EMT to the hospital immediately after testing her heart rate and blood pressure. I had tachycardia. My heart was beating 174 beats per minute, which is really dangerous. And so my lieutenant calls my shift commander and he says that I don't have a choice. I need to go to the hospital immediately. During the exam at the hospital, the nurse could not find the heartbeat of the baby who Abby had already named Chad Jr., CJ, after his deceased dad. An ultrasound confirmed that CJ no longer had a heartbeat, and Abby went into induced labor so that she could take the stillborn child home to bury with Chad. I could be wrong here, but I think that when we were talking about Ohio, we were talking about Ohio also, the worthless so-called governor not signing a bill to ban abortions. So I don't remember Trump complaining about that, if I'm remembering the story correctly. He just complained about the transgender stuff because that was the last straw. It's like he was forced to publicly denounce Mike DeWine, the traitor rhino from Ohio. So it's interesting. Ohio didn't fight. The traitors in Ohio were not fighting to protect fetuses, the life of fetuses. And here in Tennessee, there's this young lady who loses her fetus and her future, the future that little child represented. And what does this have to do with betrayal? I would dare say that I am pretty certain both of these guys took the injection. That's why, you know, the details of his death are so murky, because every time, you know, they don't give details, it's almost always a sign that, you know, they know better than to give details, because if they give details, they will be exposing what's going on with this injection stuff. So whenever it's just a sudden death and a mysterious death, which happens now all the time, look back 3 years, we would never hear about all these people dying and no cause of death being disclosed over and over and over again. You would hear it every blue moon when some famous artist would die from a drug overdose, and they wanted to cover up the overdose and all that. But now we see it constantly over and over and over and over again. And the fact that there are no details about his death, the young man's death, is a clear sign to me that he died from the injection. And, you know, all these young people dying suddenly. And then I'm pretty sure this young lady, especially being an EMT, worker, she must have been forced to take the injection or strongly coerced into taking it. And she happily took it. I'm pretty certain she has no doubt about it. She has no regrets about it. She sees no connection between one thing and the other. But the fact that she suddenly had tachycardia, what a coincidence, you know, the blood clot has, the clot shot, is known for that, for, altering because it causes blood clots. So, she already had it. See, these people are like time bombs, just like Elijah Moore, who just had this hit. It was like, it was, an accident waiting to happen, because they might feel like they're fine, everything is okay, but then they have one traumatic incident, something that pushes them over the edge. In this case, the young lady becoming pregnant, you know, and the stress that causes on the female body, that's what triggered her unwellness, and then, you know, to the point that the fetus was killed. And we have heard stories, all these stories about the rate of miscarriages since the clot shot was released. It's unprecedented. The level of miscarriages is just, it's clearly something is going on, but no one wants to talk about it. So what I want to say is she embraced the betrayal, and I'm sure that she was willing to sell her body, her soul, to the clot shot. And she had no problem with it, because it meant being accepted. It meant being part of the group. And I'm pretty sure that she was also, I don't know, it just feels like she was also an avid supporter of the clot shot. It doesn't say here in the story at all, but it just feels like it. And I feel very sorry for her, very sorry for her loss. And I'm not saying that just for the sake of saying it. I really feel sorry for what happened to her and her boyfriend, which technically, for all intents and purposes, was her husband, passing away. But they sold themselves out to a lie they accepted this evil poison because it made them feel good and to be accepted, to be normal, and now they are suffering the consequences of that. And she lost her husband, for all intents and purposes, and her son, and their son, which is very sad, very tragic. And it just it goes to show, when you're in a state of betrayal, you also end up being betrayed by the people who told them, hey, this is going to make you better. This is going to protect you against the SARS-CoV-2 virus. And these young people had no need to be protected from a virus that, you know, it's like a flu. The worst thing that could have happened to them is have a couple of days of bad of being a little under the weather, and then they would have been okay and maybe lost their sense of smell for a week or so, and that would have been it. It would have been game over, for the virus, and everything would have been fine. But no, they were told, this is going to help you. This is going to protect you against a virus that has very little chance of killing you. And they allowed themselves to be injected with this experimental drug. And now two out of the three are dead in the state of Tennessee. So betrayal and being betrayed. Now more things related to another place that is strongly related to betrayal. Ireland. So we're going to share some three stories about Ireland here very quickly. And again, I wish we were talking about other things, other more, quote, interesting things, but this is what's in the atmosphere. This is what the truth seems to be saying over and over again. And I feel the need to comply with that, to share what's in the air, because it has to be said. This story was posted on the dailymail.co.uk once again, and this was posted on the 30th of December, one week ago, 30th of December 2023. And the headline reads, Ronald Reagan's plans to play the field after divorce from first wife were thwarted when Nancy told him she was pregnant, daughter Patty Davis reveals in new memoir. So apparently this daughter of Ronald Reagan, Patty Davis, who is now 71, put out this new book. And in the book, she has these details about Ronald Reagan apparently being a philanderer, sleeping around with women after he divorced his first wife, because Nancy Reagan was his second wife, if I'm not mistaken. So in between marriages, he was, fooling around, supposedly, according to Ronald Reagan's own daughter. And then Nancy got pregnant, and that's when that ended his fooling around days, and he got married to Nancy Reagan. And he stayed married to her. Now, the reason why I'm sharing this is when you read this, you go, oh, this is disgusting. Not because Ronald Reagan was sleeping around. Whether he was or wasn't, I don't know. It's irrelevant. It's the fact that the story is coming out and being broadcast by the daughter herself. Now, let's say that Ronald Reagan did this, assuming. That we all know that he had literally a come to Jesus moment, and he converted, and he became a sincerely converted Christian. Whether you agree with Christianity or don't agree with it, it's irrelevant. It's very evident from his life and everything that he sincerely became a devoted Christian, devoted to his Christian belief. So, yes, he might have been a playboy. Maybe he was, maybe he wasn't. We don't know. But he had a conversion. And so at that moment, then everything is forgotten, you could say. And if he had continued to fool around, even after being married to Nancy Reagan and after supposedly becoming a Christian, then we'd have something to talk about. But if it's something that he kind of left behind and moved on from, why is the daughter bringing it up to embarrass and shame her own father? And she was always very evil. She was always very vitriolic against her father. And I think she was very, she hated him because of what he had become, you know, a Republican and a Christian and a conservative and all that. And she hated him for that. And she kept attacking him, her own father, for that. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is because, you know, Reagan, as far as I know, is an Irish surname. I think Ronald Reagan was Irish. Sometimes I wonder, because everything, it seems so, how shall we say, coincidental, that all these stories seem to be confirming the same themes. I start wondering if I'm reading into things that are or mistaking things. But I am convinced that Ronald Reagan was Irish. Reagan is an Irish surname. I mean, why am I even questioning myself there? But the thing is that this highlights that Ronald Reagan, the DNA in him, in a sense, got transferred into his daughter, and the daughter ended up betraying him. Ronald Reagan was not a traitor himself, because, again, when we say, Irish betrayal, doesn't mean that every single Irish person is a traitor. That would be wrong. But what we're talking about is there's something like probabilities of betrayal being manifested, being very strong in the Celtic race. There's something there. But again, doesn't mean that every single Irish person or Celtic person is a traitor. And they could very well be the very opposite of a traitor, a very loyal and righteous person. But there's a trend. And if you're born Celtic, it's something to look out for, because your Celtic brethren might be stabbing you in the back if you're not careful. So instead of being offended, it's take it as a warning, like, oh, okay. Okay, thanks for telling me, but you're telling me that I have that there is something in the DNA of my brethren that creates a tendency towards betrayal. So I'll be watching my back when I'm around my Celtic friends. So it's interesting that, you know, this woman, having nothing to gain from it except making more money, you know, obviously that's why she is telling all these salacious stories about her father. You know, she wants to sell her book, and she's willing to smear her own father. What more blatant act of betrayal can you do than this? And I could go on about Ronald Reagan and his marriage to Nancy Reagan. That was a terrible mistake on his part. He should have never been with her. He was a very bad influence. She was a very bad influence on him his whole life. And it's sad, because he could have been an even better president than he was had he been married to a different person. She contaminated him in many ways. It is what it is. Unfortunately, that's how it ended up with him. But he could have been a much better man had he been married to a different person of a different character. The other thing that we wanted to mention related to Ireland is this happened not because I found it online reading a news website or anything like that. It was one day this past week that I said to myself, and maybe we have mentioned this before in these recordings, I'm not sure, but I was wondering, okay, Joe Bite Me, is he Irish? And I started thinking, I think he's been claiming he's Irish. And so I just looked it up. Is Bite Me an Irish surname. And I found this link near the top of the search results, and it's on from irishpost.com. Irishpost.com. This is a story from March 3rd, 2021, so it's an old story, but the headline says, How Irish is Joe Bite Me? The U.S. White House resident, resident's ancestry and family links to Ireland explored. It says, as Joe Bite Me has been hailed as the most Irish-American U.S. White House resident since John F. Kennedy, but just how Irish is he? The Democrat has spoken frequently of his family ties to Ireland, which can be traced back to Mayo and Louth. County Mayo. I'm sorry, County Mayo and County Louth. Okay, sorry. While he has been known to quote Irish poets in his speeches, here the Irish Post takes a closer look at Bite Me's Irish heritage and asks the simple question: is he the most Irish White House resident to ever reside in the White House? You know, they don't say White House resident. You know, I'm pretty sure you know what they say instead of White House resident, but I'm not going to say that because he's not that at all. It says here, Bite Me's great-great-grandfather, Patrick Blewett, was born in Ballina in County Mayo back in 1932. Patrick later left Ireland in the autumn of 1850 and headed off to America. Now, that's kind of weird because his great-great-grandfather was born in 1932, but he left Ireland in the autumn of 1850 and headed to America. That must have been... I don't know how he pulled that off. So either he's a very magical Irish, or they mistyped something here. So it says here, he later returned to Ireland to bring his parents, Edward and Mary, as well as his siblings, over to live with him in America. They eventually settled in Scranton, Pennsylvania, where Patrick picked up work as a mining inspector in a job that often saw him travel over to South America. So that's interesting, the connection to the Hispanics. Patrick later had a son, Edward F. Blewett, who was born in New Orleans in 1859 and named in honor of Patrick's father, who died in a drowning accident somewhere in the U.S. in 1872. So they keep talking about the clear connection to Ireland, maybe from the mother's side, I'm not sure, but yeah. So they just go into all these details about it. So clearly he is Irish, and then they say Bite Me considers himself Irish. An exchange between the U.S. White House resident and BBC New York correspondent Nick Bryant from his time on the campaign trail famously went viral following Bite Me's response to a quick question. Asked if he would speak to the BBC, the Democrat replied, "The BBC? I'm Irish." Further proof of Bite Me's sense of Irishness can be found in a letter the former Vice White House, House resident wrote ahead of a visit to Ireland back in 2016. In the letter he wrote, "As Americans, we all hail from many homes. Somewhere along the line, someone in our lineage arrived on our shores filled with hope. We're blessed to experience that simultaneous pride in where we found ourselves while never forgetting our roots." James Joyce wrote, "When I die, Dublin will be written on my heart." Well, Northeast Pennsylvania will be written on my heart, but Ireland will be written on my soul. As we join the world in celebrating everything that Ireland has become, and indeed everything that she's always been, I could not be more honored to be returning. So clearly the son of a bitch identifies with the Celtic race because he's a traitor. He has sold his soul just for a few crumbs of supposed fame and fortune. He's been constantly selling out the country on these, with this deal, these nasty deals with his son, Robert Hunter, doing, selling the country out, for money and by using his political influence and selling it to the highest bidder so that he and his family can benefit. So he's a traitor outright. So it's not a coincidence that he identifies very clearly and blatantly with the Irish. And the sad thing is that the Irish Post is apparently proud of him connecting himself with them, which is sort of ridiculously ironic. It's like someone saying, "I'm very proud that to be connected to Hitler or to some evil, destructive force," and they're so proud to be connected to this corrupt, evil, treacherous politician, a senile, worthless son of a bitch who will burn in hell the day he dies, which will probably be this year. So the thing is that this just emphasizes the connection to between Ireland and betrayal. And the other story we wanted to mention, we kind of mentioned this in passing, it's from December 31st, 2023, on thegatewaypundit.com, and it says, "Former Speaker Kevin McCarthy's resignation from House effective today leaves Republican with razor-thin majority." So again, it's McCarthy resigning because he got ousted, and you're going to treat me like that, then I'm going to punish you. So he's punishing his own party because his own party did not support him enough to keep him in his position of power, where he did nothing, where he just acted like he was going to get things done and investigate the corruption and with Bite Me and other people. And it was all just smoke and mirrors. He never did anything. He got ousted, and instead of saying, "Okay, I'm going to stay because the country needs me and these are critical times," just like the traitor from Ohio, Bill Johnson, he said, "Oh, I'm out of here." So he quit. And McCarthy, you can't get more Irish than McCarthy. So that just shows the connection once again to Ireland, and people who, that's another thing about traitors. Traitors are never willing to make a sacrifice for anyone but themselves. And it's sad because the Celtic race has a very strong visionary component to it. And visionaries are people who are born or with a predisposition to give themselves in sacrifice for others, for a cause. So it's kind of ironic that a race that has a genetic calling, almost like internal endowment of visionary endowment, is also plagued by a betrayal. They have allowed themselves to be plagued by a betrayal spirit or mindset that kind of thwarts that compulsion or desire to give themselves for others. And that's when you have a conflicted person, a person who was born with a predisposition to do something, but then he has a conflicting force that calls him to do the very opposite that he was called to do. And that is part of the self-contradiction in the Irish mindset. And we talk about this in a posting on the website where these recordings are posted in great detail about how the Irish self-contradiction. And there are many factors that contribute to it. And that's why there's so much alcoholism and so much depression and psychological schizophrenia issues and so forth in amongst the Irish, amongst the Celtic people, because of that internal contradiction that never gets fully resolved, because they never deal with it. Not enough people call them out on it, and that's one factor. And the other factor is that even if they are called out, they don't want to admit it accept their internal contradiction, because that's the only way to resolve the contradiction. You have to admit it. There is a contradiction there, then deal with it. Okay, let's work it out and end the contradiction. But they don't want to do that. that's why they are basically in many ways just relegated. I have no hope for the Irish. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they will have some sort of a comeback. Maybe they will, or a group of Irish will. But Ireland has just proved over and over again this tendency to just be a source of great, great, profound betrayal. And it's very shocking and very saddening. And interesting that bite me in that story, we were talking about quoted James Joyce, whom we were talking about earlier in a previous recording, James Joyce and the controversy with the plaque in France and all that. So, okay, so so speaking of traitors, we just want to mention here a few more things here. This is a story that came out on Yahoo News, which I rarely watch, but the link sent me to this story from the website where I was reading. It was posted on the 31st of December, 2023. And the headline says, it's a story that they posted from ABC News on Yahoo News. And then the headline reads, former Trump White House insiders call possible second term a threat to American democracy. So they have three whores. Their names are Sarah Matthews, Cassidy Hutchinson, and Alyssa Farah Griffin. And these three white whores, these women are sitting there and talking to an ABC reporter and talking about how, and they used to work in the Trump administration. But they are, one of them was the White House communications director. The other one was a White House deputy press secretary. And the other one was a former White House aide. So they were talking to this ABC News co-anchor and telling him how they, it says here, to this day, he still doubles down on the fact that he thinks that the election was stolen and fraudulent, Matthews said, claiming Trump's rhetoric has become increasingly erratic, citing his threats to skirt the Constitution and suggestions about weaponizing the Justice Department to retaliate against his political enemies. Yeah, like what they've been doing all this time. If he threatens to do it, then, oh, that's evil. So the point I'm trying to make here is these three women were hired by Trump or by someone that Trump put his trust in to, you know, fill out the staff. And these women were walking around him and talking to him and engaging with him, and he never saw the betrayal. He never saw the knives in their hands, and now they're, you know, out there publicly acting like these heroines fighting for democracy and the American way, criticizing Trump, and it just shows you Trump was never aware of the betrayal, and just like, you know, he was not aware that Mike DeWine was a traitor. Even though people were booing him every time he would mention his name on stage, he is like no connection with reality. And more than saying something about these three whores, it says a lot more about what's inside of Trump, that he has no understanding because he's a traitor himself. So he betrays and is betrayed constantly, and then he complains. He sees when the knife is sticking out, when the sword is sticking out of his torso. That's when he finally goes, "Oh, there's someone here who is not loyal to me." He turns around and says, "Who was it?" When they've been stabbing him in the back all this time, it's only when it becomes very blatant that he finally reacts. And he never does into self-examination. How did these three women, or how did this person get close to me? How did this happen? How was I stupid enough to let these people close enough to me to stab me in the back within the reach of my back? How did I do that? How do I prevent this happening again? But see, there's no self-examination. And I think that kind of goes with one thing we wanted to share very quickly, on the side, shall we say. This week, I think it was, there was a humongous earthquake in Japan, and a very big earthquake, 7.6, and that's big. So the thing is that it did a devastating damage in Japan, and it's interesting because the day that happened, I hadn't read the story. I was talking to myself, which is a sad thing when you're alone and you just start arguing with people in your mind. So I don't know why I was thinking these thoughts, and I was imagining that I was talking to someone, and I started talking in my head, and for some reason I ended up talking about Japan as I was talking to myself, and arguing with this person in my heart and mind. I began to talk about Japan, and I began to tell this person that I about the story that I always share about that my father told me about the Japanese being so evil during World War II, because my father lived in China during the Second World War, and he was a kid. And I may have shared this in a previous recording. I'll just say it very quickly. He was a kid. I don't know exactly what age, but he must have been, let's say, 10 or 10, 11, or maybe younger than that. Who knows? But he was in China on this field, playing with another, friend of his. There were, two kids playing in the field, running around and, doing kid stuff, playing around. And then suddenly a Japanese plane flew overhead, was flying overhead, and the Japanese plane spotted my father and his friend. And there was nothing going on. It's not like they were in the middle of a battle, and they were just out there, in the field, playing. Nothing military happening around them. But the Japanese plane saw them, and the guy came down and started shooting at them, trying to kill the two kids. It's not like they were dressed in camouflage gear, and they were not. It's not like he thought they were soldiers. So and my father and his friend started running like crazy, trying to get away from the shots, and they were able to hide. And it's very vague, because my father would tell me this story when I was a kid. So apparently, from what I understand, he hid in some rice field. So they were able to run to some rice plantings or whatever, and they hid among the rice stuff, and that's how they were able to survive that incident. And it just shows the brutality of the Japanese. The Japanese were brutal, just very brutal during World War II, and that's why I get so angry when all these white fascist, ignorant liberals complain about, how we in America, we dropped the bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and how evil that is, the white man being so evil and so racist, and we didn't do that to the Germans, but we did it to the Japanese. And these people don't understand the level of evil that the Japan did. Most of these white, ignorant, white trash don't know the story about the Nanking Massacre. My father would tell me about the Nanking Massacre, and because that's how I knew. I didn't read it from a book. I read it from him, or I knew it from him. He didn't live in Nanking. He lived further south, but obviously the story got around. The Japanese invaded Nanking, which I think was the capital of China at the time, or one of the main cities for sure at the time. And they invaded Nanking, and they took over the city. They conquered it very quickly, and they started going through the whole city, raping and murdering civilians left and right just for the fun of it. Just for the fun of it. It was like a week or so of just massacring just for the fun of it. And my father would tell me these stories of that the Japanese would take babies from the hands of from the arms of the Chinese women, and then they would throw the baby up in the air and catch them, if you can call it that, with their bayonet. So they would stick up their bayonet to catch the kid, and they would impale the kid and kill him or her. And they were just doing it just for the fun, because you know they were bored, they had nothing to do. So they would go, oh, let's go impale some Chinese kids, Chinese babies, and they'd go do that, and they'd go rape women and do all this thing. They massacred around 100,000 civilians in a 1 week period. 100,000, 200,000, the numbers are, vary, but it's in the hundreds of thousands of civilians that they massacred just for the fun of it. It wasn't because it was battle, it was like, they had to bomb a building that had military equipment, and the building had civilians in it, collateral damage. It wasn't like that. It was a very deliberate massacring of civilians just for the fun of it, just enjoying themselves, raping, and just like Hamas, same thing. And they would do that, and that was just an example of their brutality. And my father could have died that day at the hands of this guy who just was doing it for the fun of it. So people don't realize how evil the Japanese were, and that's why the bombs in Hiroshima and Nagasaki were to compensate for what they did in Nanking. And I think if you add up the casualties of the two bombs, I think that you come out and balance it against what happened in Nanking. I think it kind of comes out even Stephen. Maybe the Japanese would still owe a few lives here and there. But so when the white people start complaining, saying, oh, how evil it was to drop a bomb, you go, my goodness, the ignorance of the white liberal knows no bounds. The historical ignorance, these people are disconnected from reality, from the truth. So I was going on about how Japan never, and the sad thing with Japan is they never admitted that they were wrong, never. They never, even to this day, in their school books, they make every effort to avoid showing the brutality of what they did during World War II to their kids. It's not like in Germany. Every German kid knows what Hitler did and the Holocaust. They all know it, and they're ashamed of it for the most part. And they're aware of it, and you start talking about the Holocaust or Nazi Germany or the Third Reich to a German, and you can see his face just going down in shame and looking at the ground and not wanted to make eye contact with you. You know there's shame there. But with the Japanese, it's no shame at all. It's no shame. Nothing happened. We didn't do anything wrong. And the thing is, Hirohito and Hitler, both names start with the letters H followed by an I. And I know that's not a coincidence. Hirohito, he was allowed to live, and he died of old age. He was never held to account for the brutality that he allowed. Maybe he didn't coordinated very explicitly, but he gave carte blanche to the Japanese troops. He told them he was okay with it. He was never outraged by any of it. He was happy with it. He was like, okay, go ahead. And he might have encouraged it even a bit, but clearly he was an animal, a worthless little animal, and it's an embarrassment to America and to the world that we allowed that son of a bitch to continue living, and he was never tried for the crimes he allowed. He should have been hung. And he's burning in hell as we speak, so. But he should have gotten there much faster. And the Japanese people are still, they are the epitome of people who never want to admit they're wrong. They don't want to admit that they're wrong. And Trump is in that mode. Trump has turned Japanese. And he will die without admitting that much of the disaster that happened with him and the election being stolen and all that, a lot of it, most of it, was his fault. You say, oh, it's evil people doing it to him. Well, you live in a tough neighborhood and you leave the doors open and the windows open, And then you bitch and moan, pardon my French, when your flat is robbed blind and wiped clean, and you go, how dare these people rob me? Well, you know the neighborhood is a tough neighborhood, but you leave the doors open all the time and the window open. Well, what else are you going to expect? You leave the car keys in the car when you get out of the car and into your house, because it's more comfortable for you to have the car keys there, you know, when you get, you know, go back in the next day. So, and then you complain, and it's like, no, I didn't do anything wrong. Now, these three women here are, they're just one of the myriad of examples of all the people that he, see, it's one thing to be betrayed by people that you have no choice to be around, but when you're betrayed by people that you yourself go and pick, okay, you're going to betray me. Come here. You can betray me here. You too. You come here. I want you to betray me. Come here close to me. Grab the knife over there and try to get as close to my back as possible. Come. You know, it's him calling these people in to betray him. And having no awareness of it and then complaining afterwards. It's the naivete. It just knows no bounds. And speaking of naivete, knowing no bounds, the traitor Trump said something interesting. It was posted on the January 3rd of 2024 on thegatewaypundit.com. The headline reads, Donald Trump writes column, quote, how I will end Joe Biden's border disaster on day one, unquote. So apparently Donald Trump wrote a column somewhere, not sure where, I think it says here, it was, I think, posted on the Des Moines, Iowa, you know, Des Moines is in Iowa, the Des Moines Register. He must have written an article and they published it. And he says, so I'm going to read parts of what he wrote. Under the Trump administration, we had the most secure border in U.S. history. We ended catch and release and removed over 1 million illegal aliens in my first term. I negotiated unprecedented agreements with Central American nations and brokered Remain in Mexico to stop the flow of migrants to our border. I also got the Mexican government to deploy tens of thousands of soldiers to the border free of charge. So he talks about all this success, and I would dare say, yeah, well, yeah, some of it is valid, but how shall we say it? A lot of this was just applying the law and common sense. It was nothing extraordinary. But he never finished the wall. He we've talked about this a million times, so we won't say it again. And he keeps blaming the Democrats that they didn't give me the financing. Well, how did you end up having the financing at the end to build any wall to begin with? If you were not being given the money, you eventually found a way. You just were not trying hard enough. And then you built a stupid fence that's really not a wall with all these gaps in between. And now, you know, the illegal aliens are now soldering through and getting across instead of just having built a more efficient system. And why did he do it? Because people told him that's better for us, so we can see what's coming on the other side. And then the other side can, but the thing is, the other side can see us too. So it's a fence where we can. It's ridiculous. I don't know how moronic, how more moronic you can get and still be proud of it. So he really didn't stop the flow of immigration. He didn't deal with the root issues. He never dealt with the root issues. He just did these measures to control it to some extent, but he never dealt with the legislation to really deal with the law and the fundamental issues. He never really built the wall the way it should have been built and finished it the way he promised from the beginning. He kept saying, I'll build the wall. I'll build the wall from day one. He didn't. He stalled and stalled. And then he finally, when he saw that election the election was coming, and he was sorely behind what he had promised. Then he started finding the money magically and building the crappy wall that or fence that he built, and he didn't put it in the places where it needed to be put. See, if you always attack the place of greatest damage. if you have this water just seeping through your wall, you plug up the biggest holes first, and then you go deal with the little walls. But he wasn't doing it like that. He wasn't being intelligent about it. But the thing is that and he could have done so many other things. I mean, he praises it. He makes it sound like illegal immigration stopped during his time, and it wasn't at all like that. At all like that. I was here. It's not like I was somewhere else. I was here watching it. That was not what was going on. But he makes it sound better. But obviously, anything is better than what's happening now. But that's like that doesn't say much. But what bothers me about this, it says, on my first day back in office, I will terminate every open borders policy of the Biden administration and immediately restore the full set of strong Trump border policies. Then we will begin a record-setting deportation operation. Joe Biden has given us no choice. The millions of illegal aliens who have invaded under Biden require a record number of removals. This is just common sense. To achieve this goal, I'll make it clear to every department. This is where it gets even more pathetic. To achieve this goal, I will make clear to every department and to state and local governments that we must use all resources and authorities available. We will shift massive portions of federal law enforcement to immigration enforcement, including parts of the DEA, ATF, FBI, and DHS. And the article, written by these people who are pro-Trump and conservatives, naive idiots, bite me and his party have allowed our country to be invaded in this completely intentional. If Americans want to see the border secure, there's only one choice in 2024. Yeah, that statement would make sense if Trump was a first-time candidate running for office for the first time, and we had never seen him in action. But when he says to achieve this goal, I make clear to every department and to state and local governments that we must use all resources. So he says, I am going to tell all these departments what to do. And you go, he had 4 years of that. And how much did these departments listen to him? They were running the show while he was there as quote president. And what is going to change in a second term, a Trump term? What is he going to do different so that now that the Department of Justice, the FBI, the ATF, and all these federal agencies are finally going to listen to him, when he clearly doesn't even know who to hire for White House communications director? And now you have these three bitches, these three whores, stabbing him in the back in front of a national audience. When he can't even pick the people in his White House, how is he going to have any influence on the people, or be able to filter out the people who are not going to follow his rules in all these departments? How is he going to do that? How is he going to get these people to? He clearly doesn't know how to get people to do what he needs done. Clearly, he can't do it because he can't distinguish between traitors and non-traitors. He can't do it. And he's unwilling to recognize that he can't do it in order to fix it. So it is just naive. He's going to fix it on day one. He will end the disaster on day one. Really? Really? You think that all these departments are suddenly going to say, oh, yes, sir. What do you want us to do? Right away, sir. They're going to stab him in the back just like they did for 4 years when he was in the White House, and he's not going to, he'll be none the wiser. And just as a side note, I saw this picture of him with the Saturnalia tree behind him, and he was like posting, posing with with his quote family behind in front of the Saturnalia tree, and it was. But I found it very interesting. You know, the picture had him. I think it had Jared Kushner, the Antichrist, the son of a bitch, and I call him the Antichrist, son of a bitch, because he his family, owned or was headquartered, his family's business was headquartered 666 Fifth Avenue in Manhattan, New York. So there was this trader that we've talked about over and over again, and the Jewish trader. These are the four places that have been highlighted with betrayal over and over again. It's been Ohio, Tennessee, Ireland, and Israel. As we've mentioned, you know, this the Israeli arrogance of thinking that they've been able to do things by themselves and using Christians and just for their own benefit. So there's a betrayal there. So these four are four places that for some reason are a symbol of betrayal, and they each have a certain dimension, but I still haven't been able to understand what each of them represents individually about the nature of betrayal. It's as if there are four facets of betrayal. And so Ohio represents one facet of betrayal, Tennessee another, and Ireland another, and Israel another. But I'm still not too clear on the details of that. The thing is that so Jared Kushner was there, the whore Ivanka Trump was there, and I think it was Donald Jr. and Kim Guilfoyle, his wife, I think the children. I think children of Kushner and Ivanka, and maybe I don't know if Donald Jr. has children, but there were some children there, and that was it. And I said, where is Melania, and where is Barron? Out of the whole family, the only two that have a measure of not being that contaminated by betrayal or just outright naivete and all that, and that have a sense of decency or truth connection, somehow like a remote connection to the truth. The only two in Trump's family are Melania and Barron. Barron, the son of Melania, the very tall son of Melania. And they were not, they were the only two who were not there. And the other person is Eric and his wife, I would imagine. So those are the three or four people that are, that have a measure of decency. And he was not there either. Eric, the other son of Donald Trump. So Donald Jr. was there. Donald Jr. is not evil per se. He's a nice guy, but he's naive, and everything is like a game to him. Like it's like a competition. It's not a. He does not see the seriousness of the issues. And it's not that he is cavalier about it, but yes, in a certain way he is. But it's not in a not in a blatant way. But there's no depth to his. I believe he's convinced about his beliefs, you know, conservative beliefs that he shares with his father. So he's not a traitor in that sense at all. But everything with him is just like games, competition to defeat his father's enemies. It's not about. There's no. There's no rending of garments. There's no ashes and sackcloth in him at all. I don't see that. That awareness of the country being in the state it is and having sorrow over it. And this is more than just a game and a competition to see who wins. He does not have that. There's no depth in him. Eric has more of that. He has substance, just like Melania and Barron. And they were the only ones who were not there. It's ironic, but he was willing to pose with Jared and Ivanka, even after Jared and Ivanka have clearly said they don't believe the election was stolen. They've said it outright, and even so, he's willing to pose with them. So this is the man who is going to straighten out the departments and get the departments who are full of leeches and snakes. He's going to get those departments to finally end the madness and fix immigration. What is his lasting solution for immigration? Is he going to change the immigration system? The immigration system is fundamentally flawed. is he going to do any transformational things like that? No, he's not even going to be able to fix what is there now. But that's, you know, he's a traitor who's not willing to recognize his treachery, and he's also not willing to recognize his inability to recognize traitors, and he thinks he's going to fix things on day one. That is how sad things are. So I think we're going to leave it there. There were more things we wanted to talk about. We wanted to talk about the judiciary and the connection to betrayal. But I guess we'll do that in the next recording, if that's what the truth allows, if we are to continue to talk about betrayal. But there's a betrayal at a wider scale, and it involves the judiciary branch in America and throughout the world. There's something very strongly connected to the theme of betrayal in the judiciary branch, and we'll talk about that with some stories, headlines, next time, if the truth allows that. Again, betrayal is in the air, continues to linger in the air, and we have people betraying and then experiencing the consequences of that betrayal, being betrayed themselves, and seeing that the payout of the betrayal was not worth it. That they end up losing more than they gained. And in the midst of that, we have people like Trump who are in a state of denial about the whole betrayal theme. They don't understand how to betrayal. They can't recognize it. And they continue betraying and being betrayed and thinking that somehow that's going to fix, that they're going to be able to fix things. Trump doing the art of the deal, and he doesn't realize that when he was crafting this art of the deal thing in his mind, he was actually crafting the art of betrayal, because in those dealings, you end up betraying something of yourself. If your mindset is about doing deals instead of doing what's right, then you start selling out a little bit here, a little bit there. And you start exchanging a pound of flesh, like my pound of flesh for your pound of flesh. And you start giving a little bit of yourself at the end. And then at the end of the day, you're left with nothing because you've sold yourself out in these little parts. And that's the art of betrayal. The art of the deal is really, at the end of the day, the art of betrayal. You know, how to betray enough to get what you need. And make sure that to not be betrayed too much in the deal. You know, it's this just constant giving and receiving of betrayals. And that sort of system of operation is unsustainable. You have to live on principle, because when you're living in a system of betrayal, then eventually everybody's going to be dead, because you know, everybody's stabbing each other in the back. And at the end of the day, everybody in the room is dead. It's like that Mexican standoff thing that they talk about, where everybody ends up killing each other or something like that. I think that's what it's called. And that's what happened in America. That's why we died, because we were in this constant state of betrayal from the Christian church all the way, you know, to every level, conservatives. The matriarchal American Christians thinking that, yeah, we just give a little bit of this so that we can have in return a certain level of peace and stability for ourselves, and we don't have to make a radical change. As long as we sell out a little bit here, a little bit there, then we'll be okay. And it never works out. At the end of the day, the payout from the betrayal is never worth the betrayal. It never pays off. And then when you enter into betrayal, you go into this atmosphere of betraying and being betrayed, betraying and being betrayed. And this constant, you know, mutual stabbing that starts going on, stabbing in the back. And that's why the country is dead. And And for some reason, I know there's a reason why we need to talk about all these things, and keep saying betrayal and traitor over and over again, and talk about that dynamic, because that's where we are right now. Thank you very much for listening.